When I was davening this morning, when I get to shul early and I look at Karbonos, and I realized that the first thing we say in Karbonos is actually the first six psukim of our Parsha Tzav, which talks about the Ola. Right, and that's so I sang, wow, it's amazing, all those mitzvahs are right here. And then I realized that it's actually exactly the sixth psukim that the Torah has. So I had never focused on that before. A little while ago, I heard a shiur by someone who said, the majority of us don't say Karbonos at all. And he said, I'm not sure if, he said, whether you have to or not, but he said, if you ever want to think that maybe you want to get somewhat used to it, he says, go to the back where it says, Ezem Akam, Kaimachel Zavachim. There's seven or eight Mishnahs there. Say one of them, and just keep saying that one. He says, eventually maybe you'll say two, etc. He said, it's a good thing because the Karbonos, we're told, take our saying the Karbonos, reading it, is considered on some level as if we had brought the Karbon. All
right.
Right. Okay, I'm going to try to wrap up the other topics in this Parsha, because again, it's highly technical. We talked about the fact that every Kohen on the day he began his avoda brought a special korban, and we're told that the Kohen Gadol was required to offer a mincha, a flower offering, called the Minchas Chavitin, and he had to buy it with his own money. Half was given on the altar in the morning, and the other half in the afternoon. And there's a procedure of oil, bread, breaking it into pieces, salting it, etc. The Abarbanel says the reason why the Kohen Gadol had to bring a daily offering, right? First it says, the Chachamim in Sanhedrin, Gemara said, first adorn yourself and then adorn others. This saying says that a person should first work on their own self-improvement before attempting to affect anyone else. And so the Kohen, in effect, was bringing a korban as the exemplar for the community. And the Abarbanel continued, oftentimes, we'll reprove somebody for the same defect we have. He says, I'm going to tell you the story from Bereishis of Lemach and his wives. Lemach killed Cain and Cain's son, Tuval Cain. I believe he was blind. Thereafter, his wives, or it might have been his own son, Tuval Cain, his wives said, okay, that's it. We're separating, right? Because they felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take any child they may have and kill it. They felt that was Lemach's destiny. He said to them, okay, I understand, but what I'd like you to do is go see the greatest man in our generation, who was Adam Harishon. And Adam said, it's not for you to deliberate and do cheshbonos on what a Kadosh Baruch Hu will do. You are required to populate the world. You are required to have children. And, right, therefore, you're required to live with your husband. Lamech's wives were very bright people, and they said to Adam, hold on, you're giving us the command to live with our husband. Haven't you been apart from Chava for the last 130 years since death was decreed upon mankind? It says, Adam admitted that what they said was truthful and that he himself had to listen to his own admonition, his own warning. It says, Rabba Bar Rav Huna owned a forest on a river. And the Chachamim said, cut down all the trees so that ships can anchor here. And he said to them, why do you ask this? My neighbor has woods to the right and to the left of me. He has not cut down any of those. Why don't you tell him first? And the Chachamim said, no. You're required to do what you have to do first. And others will follow. You are someone who has to set the pace. Be the example. Okay. It says that his neighbor was in fact not Jewish and he would not have listened. And then he showed to them that his ocean side, his frontage onto the water was not enough for ships to dock. And therefore, they said, okay, that's appropriate. You know, if it's not going to accomplish anything, we're not going to have you cut down your trees. It says, the Kohen Gadol's job, in large measure, was to attain forgiveness for any averos of the Jewish people. And it was only right that he must be as perfect as possible. Therefore, in bringing this korban daily, he showed to people that he too had to do kapora, and that there was nobody above doing that. He encouraged in that way others to come forward and bring the korbanos when they did an avera. They realized if Kohen Gadol, if Aaron HaKohen, and those under him, Elazar, Pinchas, were doing this, who were they to not follow the example? We're told that if we look at the items included in the Kohen's flower offering, this was a type of offering that the poorest of the poor would bring. There were certain korbanos that if you were very wealthy, you bought a bullock. If a little less, you'd bring a sheep. Even less, you'd bring turtle doves. And if you were the poorest of the poor, you would bring a mincha, a meal offering, a cereal offering. This was done so that every single person who could only bring a korban mincha would not feel ashamed. They would realize that the greatest kohen in the Beis HaMikdash brings the same korban. It says, when the Egel occurred, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I will remember when I will remember. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, and the Jewish people were probably told it also, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not take the retribution. He would not bring to Klal Yisroel the full measure of the punishment they deserved. Rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he would scatter the after effects or what had to happen because of the ego throughout all the generations. Therefore, it said that the Kohen Gadol, successor of Aaron, brought his korban in some way to continue to do this type of tshuva for this. The Torah then turns to the korban todah. We know that we bench gomel at certain times in our lives today, and we know as well that we say Mizmor Lasoda after Hodu and Shachris. The Thanksgiving offering, Toda means to thank, was given by a Jew who was let out of prison, by someone who recovered from a serious illness, from someone who safely returned from a sea mission voyage, and someone who crossed the desert and came back safely. Last night, Rabbi Lehrfeld told two quick, cute stories about people getting out of jail. He said there was a pauper in Israel who decided that his luck was so bad, he was going to get himself arrested so that he could spend a period in a low-security jail and be taken care of. So what the individual did is he caused some minor trespass. He did something, and when the police came, he says, I'd like to do greater damage, and they put him away. So the judge said, okay, I'll give you 9 months as a deterrent. The guy was thrilled. He got to go to jail. There was a minion. He got to sit and hear shiurim in jail. He got 3 meals a day, right? And he had a place with warmth in the winter to sleep. You know, he was in his own better spot, so to speak. When the 9 months were up, since the guy obviously was religious or observant, he went to Rav Zilberstein and he said, I got to ask you a question. He said, do I have to bench Goymel because I got out of jail? And Rav Zilberstein said, tell me, why were you in jail? And he explained, and Rav Zilberstein said, no. He said, benching Goymel for getting out of jail is for somebody who was there as a, right, as a punishment, for whom it meant jail. For you, it was a vacation, and we don't say benching Goymel on a vacation.
And, very good.
And then he told another story, equally fascinating, that a guy went to a Land Rover dealer in Jerusalem. No, I guess they have them, obviously, because you get whatever you want. And he bought a Land Rover for $50,000.
Cash.
Cash on the barrel. And they didn't think anything. He came back an hour later and he said, I want to sell it back to you for $20,000. They said, but you just bought it for $50,000. He says, all I want is give me $20,000 of the cash and I'm happy. Now they became concerned and they called the cops. The police came And a guy who's, you know, this kind of cash, they figured he had to be a drug dealer. He had to be a gun smuggler. God knows what nefarious thing he was doing. And so they took him into custody. And they started trying to figure out who he was. But he had done a good job in hiding his identity and things of this nature, etc. And he couldn't be found out. And so they had to keep him in jail for a couple of weeks. They did an entire security check. And lo and behold, the guy didn't do anything. And it seems that some of the Israeli police roughed him up a bit, and he had cameras. And so finally, after 3.5 weeks, he gets released. When he gets released, he goes back to the dealership, who never bought the car back, and he asks for his car, and he takes it off the lot. And he promptly goes to his lawyer, who brings a lawsuit for false imprisonment against the state. And the rabbi says, and this guy had the muzzle that he had to settle. They had to give him like $3 million of reparations for what they did.
Wow.
All right?
Wow.
And then he says, the guy also went to Rav Zilberstein, and he said, do I have to bench Goymel for getting out of jail? And he got the same answer again. You're going to jail was done with the Kavana. You ended up getting $3 million. And then he asked Rav Zilberstein the question, how much of it can I give to tzedakah? The rabbi didn't answer this question. He said, was that an ill-gotten gain that didn't belong in tzedakah or not? He said, that would take another couple hours to go through. But he said, we can't automatically assume that technical rules are always to be followed in complete technicality. The Torah then goes through a few other items. There is a prohibition that you may not shecht a korban, having in mind that you will eat it beyond the prescribed amount of time, right? Or outside of the area it's required to be eaten in. For example, kachim had to be eaten in the temple compound, in the Mishkan compound, and kachim kalim could be eaten all through Yerushalayim, or only, I guess, in the camp of the Jews. And if you had this kavana, you made this korban, it's called pigel, right? And by making it pigel, if you, for example, ate it, the kohen, he has chayav misa. The problem with leaving a korban over is that it's called noisar, and you're not allowed to do that. So if you had kavon at the very beginning to create a korban that would have a self-impediment in it, you caused a problem. We're also told that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does not allow us to eat certain fatty parts of bovine, oxen and cows, sheep and goats. These have to be removed. That's called nicker, right? The moving of this. And the reason is because these were the parts that were brought on the Mizbeach. There is also the fact that we may not consume blood of animals. Even after Shechita, And we know the halacha is, both with regards to korbanos and with the stuff we eat ourselves, there's got to be a salting process to remove any blood. And we're told here in this sefer, which goes through the Medrash, that we have repeated warnings from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which says, don't eat the blood. The blood is the lifeblood. It's the life. If eat by ingesting blood, it says, a person becomes a possessor of the animal's natural cruelty instinct and could turn an individual into a brute. We, Klal Yisroel, are supposed to be well-behaved, right? We're supposed to be Rachmanim Baishanim and Goimlei Tzedek. We have to have Rachmanis mercy. We've got to show that we have a level of humility, and we've got to help others. That's not an attribute that comes from animals. And it says that any Jew who would eat from the blood, right, has kores, and it's self-inflicted. We try to be smarter than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we were prepared to, we'll call it, self-pollution into our very being. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a certain level of punishment for this. Okay. The next section of the Parsha, I can't cover in 5 or 6 minutes, I don't think. It's going to deal with the last 7 days in the months of Adar, right before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when the Beis HaMikdash was going to be started to be used by Aaron HaKohen. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said there should be 7 days of inauguration of the Mishkan, right? These are described as the last topic in Parshas Tetzaveh. And then we break at the end of Tetzav and we get to the beginning, Vayihi Bayoim Hashmini, the 8th day. Now we should realize that with all these parshas that we've done, we have not spanned a very large period of time, right? We've only gone from the day after Yom Kippur, when Moshe told the Jews about the Mishkan, up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This is the last 7 days of Adar. Okay. Whoops.
There are 3 participants in the conference.
Mike,
please announce yourself.